people who love them.
Hello, this is The Thing About Cars. Thank you for joining us. We are recording, as always, in the beautiful city of Atlanta in Strongbox West. Around the table, we've got...
Ben.
Becca.
And Tim.
And I'm Mickey. Let's start this episode with a quick moment of trivia, our so far called Jalopy Joust. The question is really quite simple. Who invented cruise control? Was it a school teacher, a blind man, a milkman, or a nun?
Oh, my.
Don't answer right away. Think about it. While you're thinking about it, I want to jump into a few listener questions. The first one, what's the best classic muscle car for a man who's at least 6'5"? This question was posed by my friend Donnie, and I don't know which 6'5" person he's got in mind, but he wants to look at classic muscle cars for a 6'5" individual. Tim, since you are 6'5".
Wow. When I was looking for my first car back when I was 16, there was a neighbor down the street who had a Mercury Cougar, mm-hmm. which was basically a Mustang with different badging on it at that point.
Right.
And I do remember that I fit in that. As far as other classic muscle cars, I haven't sat in too many of them. So,
yeah.
Well, what's crossing my mind? I've got something like Rambler crossing my mind.
And Ash Rambler?
Well,
it was my dad's first car, but he was only 6 feet tall.
These were things that were more, I guess, what back then would have been sleepers. They were closer to sedan type bodies, but you still could get the V8s in them. And that's the only name crossing my mind. It's not exactly what I'm going for. I don't know why that's sticking in my head.
But what about Nova? I don't know. Some of the Novas can be kind of small.
Malibu.
Others are not. I'm thinking GTO. I'm thinking 442.
Yes, 442, right. Like the Oldsmobile, yep. The Malibu.
And I tend to think the Mopars would be pretty good too.
Yes.
They tend to be kind of – Chryslers in the old days were always kind of big. And exactly. I know that – when I was growing up, my dad had a 1970 Belvedere, which was made on the satellite platform. And this was the stripper base model, vinyl seats and three on the tree and all that. And I know that if it had the sportier buckets, there'd be even more headroom.
Right.
So,
right.
Okay. And we had a 1972 Plymouth Valiant,
right.
Which, an offshoot of that would be a Barracuda or
right.
a Dodge Dart.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. If you can find one that hasn't rusted away.
Right.
There's a Dart over in Woodstock that I see roaming around. Yep. An original, not the neon version.
Donnie, I hope that answers your question. If you need some help going out to find muscle cars for a tall person, give me a call. Let's go do this. And be sure that I'm going to use that content on this podcast. My friend Todd asks a question. He says, why did curb feelers go out of style and how do we bring them back?
Oh, wow.
Where to start?
Donnie and Todd went to high school together. So on my Facebook page, Donnie quickly wrote back to Todd and said, well, it's because curbs have finally started telling people to keep their hands to themselves.
So, nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Da-dum-dum. But no, I mean, why did curb feelers go out of style?
I think most people like to feel out the curbs with their wheels.
Right. That's it. Let's see. They're chrome. Not every car goes well with chrome.
Right.
It looks like.
Well, let me ask this.
Like a catfish.
Let's for a moment try to take the question seriously, even though it's a ridiculous question. What was the function of a curb feeler?
To tell you were about to hit a curb before your wheel hit it.
When you're parallel parking. Right. Is that not a useful function?
If you don't park in cities.
Yes.
Then no. If you park at a shopping mall, then there's no use for them.
Right.
And it also kind of announces to the world that you have no depth perception.
Yeah, exactly. First thought is learn where your car is, but a lot of people don't do that nowadays.
Right, and in the modern cars, they've been replaced by the cameras and the backup beepers that let you know you're about to plow into something.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think your answer is somewhere in there, Todd.
Good luck with you.
I'm with you, man. If you want to get curb feelers, man, you rock it. That's just
– I've been willing to bet somebody somewhere probably still makes them just for that little narrow niche of people who want to make a pimp style car or something.
Or eBay.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Now I know what I'm getting Todd for his birthday.
Oh, there you go.
There we go.
That's it.
Right.
Well, I don't know. Are there flexible – or is there flexible rebar out there? It's essentially what they were. They were designed to make a racket when you hit the curb.
Right.
But they were bouncy, so you would need flexible.
It was an ablative thing, right? You were meant to be able to destroy a curb feeler before it destroyed your bumper or your
wheel.
Right. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And Steve Rankin, being the another chief Peanut Gallery participant, says, is it hit and run if the car did it and not me? Steve?
I would need to know the situation, but yes, it is coming from the insurance person because it's your car that's insured. It's your car that does it. Yeah, it's right. Still hit and run when your car, if it's running away all on its own, if it's possessed, if it's...
Failure to control your vehicle.
Right.
Exactly. You're responsible for controlling your vehicle or whoever has possession of it, and it's the car that's insured, so yes.
Yes. If you don't know how to set the parking brake, if you don't know how to put it in park,
right.
If you don't know how to take the keys out of the ignition, then it's all your fault.
Press the start button to stop it.
Oh, in this town, I frequently said, look, if you can't handle the SUV, just get another car. If you don't know where the boundaries of your car are, why are you trying to do this and endangering the rest of us?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah. And so, yeah. But all right. So moving on, I've read one headline that I wanted to put on the table. And that headline is J.D. Power now says that Korean cars are beating U.S. and Europe in quality. I didn't read the actual article. Just working on the claim that the headline makes. I got to say that doesn't actually surprise me. The Korean market's been stepping up in a major way in the last several years, I think. So.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. So let's list our Korean manufacturers.
Kia.
Okay. Anybody else?
Hyundai.
Okay. But both of those have models that are actually made in America.
Right.
So.
But of course, the design work is your foundation for quality.
Right. But without reading the article.
Yeah.
Right. Which one?
The management of them is Korean.
Oh, yeah. Well, without reading the article, though, we don't know if they mean design quality or actual build quality.
Well, if it's J.D. Power, it'll be initial delivery.
Right. And we could read the article and dig a little deeper, but I'm going to put another idea on the table that, yes, it is the design. Yes, it is the management. But both of those contribute towards overall culture within the company, even if it's an American plant. Mm-hmm. And I would say organizational culture has a whole lot to do with the quality of the deliverable, more so than stellar management or a great design. You can have a great designed car, but if people in the company suck, their finished product is not going to be that good.
But I'd say on the flip side, if you have a poorly designed vehicle, it doesn't matter how good your assembly people are, and it's never going to be great.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
And another interesting angle too, though, is that you look at modern cars and all of them are just so good. Not that they're all great, but the gap between the best car and the worst car quality-wise today is narrower than it's probably ever been.
Yeah.
And a lot of assembly is done by robotics as well. Mm. So as far as just fitment of panels and glass and things, those tend to be controlled. And whoever is working there is just doing the spot welds or what have you. Not always, not in every case, but a lot of them are a little bit more precise with the assembly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it tends to be the robots that do the spot welding and then the people that do the soft installation.
Right. Right. Well, the visual image I get is the robotic arm that has the panel and it's carrying it over and, later weld, more robot. Right, right.
Yeah.
Cool. So. All right. Moving on with our agenda. That's one of the rare times we've actually finished a conversation with okay, what's next? Because otherwise that seems like we all need Adderall. We can just go on forever.
So Adderall, if anyone out there has actually Adderall, makes me talk more.
Oh. All right. Becca, you wrote this thing on the board, Jeep tree clips. What is that all about?
And the reason why I wrote tree in quotes. It was something that Ronnie had mentioned a ways back. It was not long after I had gotten the Jeep.
He does not like the tree clip. He's not a fan of using that as a connector.
Right. And he had mentioned that.
We're talking about the panel fastener things, right?
Yes. When you pull an interior panel out in the Jeep, they are just, all of them are held on by multiple tree clips, as he calls them. I don't know if I would call it a tree, but anyways, he was talking about you pull it out even one time. Sometimes the tree clips are ruined, and he had made comment about then you have to get rid of the panel. Well, not long after that, I pulled off another panel, and he was in the back of my head. So I turned it over, and I'm looking, and I confirmed it with a shop out in Marietta. Those are totally replaceable. You don't have to throw out your panel. You can pull out or pull off the tree clips.
Right.
So if anybody is thinking that you need to pull out or geez, I can't talk now. If anybody's thinking you need to throw away the panels on your Chrysler product because your tree clip is no longer fastening, no.
Just get a new clip.
Yeah, right. You can pop them off and get a new clip. Sure, so it was something I wanted to make mention of since we had said an earlier time it ruins the panel.
Well, I mean, Ronnie needs to be here so he can speak for himself, but I think he views the tree clip fastener as a low quality solution to what should otherwise be a bolt or a screw.
Well, and I agree. I mean, like in my Fords, I have what I don't know if we would call it a screw or what have you, but and it's plastic. It's not great, but it's easier to work with. I think as far as Ronnie goes, he just doesn't work with a lot of Chryslers. I mean, we know
it's not a terrible fastener. You know, like everything, it's got its limitations, its strengths and weaknesses.
Exactly.
You know? So it's good in some applications and maybe not so good in others.
Right.
It's not pretty. They don't always.
It's fast.
Fit
I just looked it up. It's called a tree fastener or a push fastener. There may be a few other terms for the same thing, right?
But, yeah.
Now we're talking about the ones that are on the backside of interior panels.
Yes.
There's no where you don't want to see a fastener protruding out through the face of the
or the
piece.
Leave a hole. You stick in your little tree fastener and then you put a cap on top of it so that it's the same color.
Right.
And just a,
well, they forget that way. There's no hole showing through.
Right.
So it was a way around that, but they just don't tend to fit as snug, in my opinion.
Ronnie. Again, Ronnie, I hope you're listening to this. You can correct us when you get back at the table. But Ronnie's like, because I told him, I said, I'm thinking about getting a Challenger. This was when I had actual money to spend. And he says, no, don't do it. The thing is held together by those little Christmas tree things. And I'm like, I don't know that I would hold that against them. But Ronnie just, everyone has their preferences.
Depends, too, on how much you expect to be taking those panels apart.
Exactly.
Well, when it's somebody like me, I'm digging through stuff all the time. And it's my first Chrysler product, so I'm learning new things. But it was just, I decided to see, okay, when one of mine gives away, is it truly ruined? And I happened to have a panel off and then just happened to be at a specialty store and saw that they had a whole bunch of them for sale. So I wanted to make mention of that to any Chrysler owner. And if you need to know what shop I went to, actually, I wanted to mention them and now I don't remember where I put their cart. It's a neat little shop, but it's one of those you got to know it's there.
It'll come to your head in a moment. Well,
you want to invite him to come speak with us someday? Maybe.
That would be awesome.
One person in the shop. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Jim, let me see. I'm going to come over here and dig out my thing. Hold
on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was wondering. It might not be the actual tree clip itself, but the mounting spot on the back of the panel where the tree clip kind of slides into sideways. If that is failing, of course, then you get to play with some industrial strength adhesive to put the new one back in or reuse the old one. But
or a plastic stapler. But I've learned be very careful with those. There we go. Touchstone Auto Paint.
Okay.
In what city?
This is in Marietta, Georgia.
Okay.
But, you know, they have their website and everything, and it's called Auto Paint, and there's a lot of auto paint and supplies, so refinishing, what have you, your abrasives, your sanding, lots of very interesting chemicals, some industrial, what am I going for, the roof, the ceiling liner. My words have escaped me now. Because, I blew through everything on the market for the headliner. I know you've had issues. Mm-hmm. They have industrial stuff in there. And it was just, rubbing the chin. Yeah. I was thinking of you.
You always think of me when you rub your chin?
I'm having to stop. The comments I make are not safe for podcast right now. I so want to answer that, but...
Let's invite him to come talk to us, but let's make sure Katie's with us when we do that because that's her wheelhouse.
And I had wanted to mention to her because at one point there had been a help wanted sign. I don't know to what extent if they actually do anything in one of the other buildings or if it's just a counter sales. I wasn't sure, but it's a neat group. And again, they're Touchstone Auto Paint in Marietta.
Okay. Excellent. So. Great. The next item on our agenda, Angel's 20th. What does that mean?
And I used her name and I actually had mentioned earlier, I try not to refer to my cars as girls and by their name, but yes, they're all my girls. I talk about them that way all the time. Angel is my Mustang.
And she's 20 years old.
No, she's not 20 years old.
Oh.
I just put Angel's 20th. We just had our 20th anniversary. So I originally got her April 19th, 1999. So it was one of our big anniversaries. No, I didn't look it up to see what I'm supposed to buy her or install in her. What weird present should I give her?
20 years silver? Is that silver? Or is that 25?
No, 25 is silver.
25 is silver. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, but I think with cars, it's different substances altogether. Yeah.
Right. I think probably. 20th is chrome.
Chrome.
No, I'm not putting chrome on my Mustang. Just no.
Well, it's an old system. It's right. Yeah.
I'm giving him furrowed brow.
It's like when they tell you your 9th wedding anniversary is cork. You know, that's because someone, you know, 500 years ago decided cork. That's very, something very useful right now.
Well, if you have a leaky MG, then especially so.
Oh, yes.
And there's cork
gaskets
flooring.
For all occasions.
Cork flooring.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of a bottle of wine, but hey.
There you go. There you go. See, now my brain just went totally blank. No, as far as age, she's a 97, but she actually left the assembly line October 1996.
Okay.
As far as her age, yes, I bought her used. Yes, I know the previous owner, and he was actually a wrestler.
Hmm. Nice.
He's not wrestling anymore, so he's not known, but Buff Bagwell. Huh. Was the previous owner.
Don't know that.
The original owner, and his, I believe, brother worked at the dealership where I had friends.
Okay.
You're like, move along. Move along.
I'm just wondering
how congratulations on the anniversary.
Yes.
Thank you.
Very well done.
20 years. It's surreal. Think about it. Having a car for 20 years.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I've never had one that long.
And she is still the most reliable car in the bunch.
Mm. Wow.
Although, props to my Jeep for the recent trip it made.
So we go back to the trivia thing?
Oh, yes.
The question was, who invented cruise control? Was it a nun, a milkman, a blind man, or a school teacher?
Oh, the mind boggles.
I'm going to go with milkman.
Milkman?
Although I kind of want to go for blind man. It's one of those things that you throw in that doesn't really fit, makes you want to go for it. But I'm just thinking of the milkman routes they used to have.
Yeah.
Of course, they were glass bottles, so he can really fling them out.
But. Becca's thinking milkman. Milkman?
I want to go for full irony and go with blind man.
Blind man?
Yeah, the blind man just kind of leaps out at me for some weird reason. Like
it
maybe
doesn't belong.
This guy, he doesn't drive, so he doesn't have the same perspective. So maybe he thought of something nobody else did.
So a blind man, a nun, and a milkman walk into a car dealership.
Walk into a car dealership and say, I'm tired of, So here's the answer. The answer is, modern cruise control, also known as speedostat or tempomat, was invented in 1948 by the inventor and mechanical engineer Ralph Teeter, who lost his sight at the age of 5.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a blind man. His idea was born out of the frustration of riding in a car driven by his lawyer, who kept speeding up and slowing down as he talked. The first car with Teeter system was the 1958 Chrysler Imperial. The system was called the Autopilot, and it used a speed dial on the dashboard.
Cool.
So there's our answer. An actual blind man.
Interesting. So I should...
And I've heard of people who, speaking of his lawyer, was it?
Yes.
Kept speeding up and slowing down. I've heard of people who, when they drive, just for some reason can't hold their foot at a particular spot on the accelerator.
Oh, right.
And they just are always either accelerating a little bit and they realize they've slowed down and accelerating, decelerating and
how they're getting into the conversation. Mine is more mood. If you're a passenger in my car, don't piss me off. You will see it come out in my driving style. I'm taking my frustration out through aggression.
I've known people who accelerated in order to brake, and they would sort of be unaware of how hard they were accelerating or how fast they were accelerating. So they'd be like just tooling along, driving, and they'd look down and realize they were going faster, and then they would brake. And then the whole cycle would start all over again. Right?
No, I hate those people. I'm sorry. I get behind you, and all you see is brake, brake, brake. It's like take your foot off the gas pedal.
How about the opposite ones who can't sit at a red light without constantly creeping?
Yes.
The red light creepers.
The red light creepers. Yeah. There's an actual word for this, depending on the person, I suppose. But I've heard the word pre-greening.
Oh, geez.
So they're trying to get a little bit of forward momentum before the light turns green.
People make it all the way out into the intersection.
I've seen that, too.
It's craziness. It's absolute craziness.
Save your brake pads. Just stop and stay there.
And in general, don't be in a rush. What's the big rush? What's so important about getting through that intersection?
Well, that's why we buy faster cars.
That's true.
But along the same note, that there are lots of people you don't always know where it comes out at. Yeah. My mom can't chew gum and type at the same time. She types super fast. So she ends up you know, like some deranged chipmunk gnashing on her gum while she's typing. Yeah. Yeah. So it can happen. I've seen people like that.
That's too funny.
Yeah.
No, but okay. So now we're off topic here after we've answered the trivia question. But since when did intersections, red lights, since when did they become this demilitarized zone of sheer terror? Because everybody's running the light, or everyone's trying to get through it quickly. I don't know. I don't know if there's a question there or not. It's just, you know, what have we done to the intersection in specific that you have to check yourself like four times before even hitting the accelerator to get through that thing safely?
Mm-hmm. And nothing is ever timed the same. Right. So if you're unfamiliar with it, you don't know if it's got a long yellow or a short yellow. Right. And there's a term, if there are any civil engineers out there, I've been trying to remember this term for years, only because way back when I dated a civil engineer. And there is this term that there is no way to time any light exactly right. There is this term, and I can't think of it, to where the timing is off. It doesn't matter if you're going the speed limit or your distance or whatever. You can't safely stop or go. Mm-hmm. And it's like this fraction, but there is a term for it. And I can't.
I don't know what that would be, but I can understand that. You know, depending on whether you're timing for a car that has stopped in the red light cycle, depending on when the cars were released from the previous light at their green light, you know, depending on what the distance is, you may have trouble because they're going to have to slow down for the people who are just started accelerating when that green went. I'm sure there's a lot of factors that you have to take into place. Gets into the psychology of people's driving as well.
Well, and I don't think the civil engineers really get so much into the psychology, but I am suddenly wondering if my friend Jacob has been listening to the podcast, because I know he has to do with that. So yes, that's why I'm making this strange little note down here, is to ask him. But, I was going to go somewhere else with that.
Yeah.
Well, we're out of time. We're going to have to pick it up next time.
All right.
Okay. So I'm giving Becca half a second just to see if it triggers her memory, but if nothing's coming.
Just rambling on about intersections and driving habits, yes.
Well, that's it for the thing about cars today. Anybody got anything else quickly that we can touch on, just wrap things up with? Nuggets of wisdom, pearls of...
I don't know. How long is the pearl of wisdom need to be?
Well, Ben has the best one.
Be safe out there.
That's it. So thank you for listening to us. Find us at thethingaboutcars.com. We always welcome your questions and suggestions. We even have a Patreon page if you feel like supporting our efforts. We will use those funds to buy new gear. And thanks for joining us. We will see you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.